Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode, a new season of The Sunday Roast. We have a wonderful guest, an old regular of the show, but my wonderful co-host, Alex. Can you tell us a bit about yourself before we begin?
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm known as Political X on YouTube. I'm a historian, author, journalist, and try to be an all-round do-gooder. And Phil, please introduce yourself. Not that you need much of an introduction.
Yes, I'm Phil, a former teacher who now discusses politics on YouTube, mostly focused on Westminster politics, with a lot of Brexit in there as well, and then anything else that happens to be interesting.
And Max, my wonderful co-host.
My name is Max. I run the Rubbersphere channel, where I talk about British politics. Our first topic of this week for this week is, of course, the winter fuel allowance vote in Parliament and the shenanigans around that. Phil, what's your take on that?
So, I mean, there's two aspects of it. There's the policy and the politics. The policy is not awful, but the fact that they've set the bar too low is. And the politics is just terrible from start to finish, because ultimately the whole thing is going to save about £1.5 billion. And I know it has to be saved somewhere. But as soon as it happened, I said, well, it's quite bold to take something off pensioners for a start in politics for two reasons. First of all, they're a large voting bloc, so they're important to politicians, albeit they're more the Conservatives' target voter than Labour's. But also, it's no surprise that this is in the news all over the place, because you think to yourself, well, hang on a minute, why wouldn't they cover something about the problems faced by disabled people or working people who can't even afford to eat? Why? Because elderly people are also really important customers for the media, right? But the politics is pretty shocking, and the thing, although you might think they've sort of gotten away with it now because they've had this vote is, like, there's all sorts of weird reports about, oh, Labour are refusing to publish the impact assessment report. It's like, well, that's because it's part of the budget. They release the impact assessment when the budget is released at the end of October. Admittedly, this is something they've had to put in place now. Arguably they shouldn't have done. Arguably they should have said, if they were going to announce they were going to do this, they should have first of all set the bar higher. My attitude is, we should make sure, if there has to be some people who get it that don't need it, to make sure nobody who does need it doesn't, there you go. And then you can fine tune it over time. I suppose Labour will be wanting to go, if we need to do unpopular things, let's do them all at once.
Can I ask a question? Like, I don't understand why they didn't, for example, introduce it as a tax later on the richest pensioners, and then just keep it as a universal benefit.
It's funny you should say that, because they have something similar, which I only found out recently, for child benefit, because I'm now married to someone who has children, although they don't get child, or she doesn't get child benefit for her children anymore, but she did a few years ago. And they're trying to say to me, oh, were you living as man and wife back then? Because here's the funny thing about child benefit. That's universal, or so I thought. So it is universal. But if you're earning above, if anyone connected at all with the parents earns above a certain amount, they then charge you a tax, which basically recovers it all. So instead of just saying, oh, if you earn above a certain amount, you can't have child benefit, what they do is instead they give you the child benefit, then they tax you this, what's it called? I can't remember what it's called, CHIB, child higher something, but. But anyway, they basically tax you for the exact amount back if you earn above a certain amount, or a sliding scale. So because I earn above that, and you know, they've sent me a letter recently going, oh, do you need to pay this from a couple of years ago? So they could do the same thing. But to me, that's just mad. It's like giving you a thing and then taxing you just to take it back again. And they'd still need to know who that is. And if you know who that is, you can just...
But maybe, yeah, like from an economic point of view, it probably doesn't make a huge amount of sense. But from a political point of view, it would have been, they wouldn't have had to.
Very possibly, yeah. I mean, the thing is, they were, I mean, it's a cut. I mean, there's lots of people talking about, oh, this is going to be an austerity budget. It's like, well, no. If you add up the extra spending they've already announced, and you add up the extra cuts they've announced so far, they'd have to announce a hell of a lot more cuts for it to be an austerity budget. But nonetheless, it's a cut, and people don't like cuts. And voters especially don't like cuts, and there's a lot of people who vote for pensions. But it's, you know, they could have, if they had to cut something, they could have cut something else that would have been less controversial. It's gone completely wappy, because now all the news is about this. And I'll tell you what is going to happen, and this should have made it a completely impossible policy to enact in its current form. So every year there are thousands of pensioners who die, or thousands of elderly people who die in their homes every winter, specifically because their home is too cold. It's like 4,000 odd. So and no one really makes a fuss about this, but they will this winter. The bloodhounds from the Sun will be out trying to find just one elderly person who died that they can claim had the winter fuel payment take off, and they'll say Keir Starmer murdered this pensioner. It'll be all over the front pages. And I do not, and they only need to find one. They'll just find one. And I do not know why Labour are risking that. And the other thing as well is that's the minimum they need to do. If they can, they'll try and claim that the number of elderly people this winter who died because it's too cold has increased. And the thing like that is, the major factor for that is how cold the winter is.
Yeah.
So if we have a particularly mild winter, the number probably goes down. That's fine. They just won't mention it. They'll still find that one pensioner, right? But if it's a particularly cold winter and that number goes up, they'll blame that on this as well.
You brought up disabled people with it. I don't agree with it. I don't think they should have gone this way. I don't like it. I think it's a poor choice. I think I'd rather have them try and get the tax back afterwards, personally. Because at the end of the day, you're just risking someone's life. And that's the thing. You're basically saying, I'm willing to do a means-tested thing.
The way it's been applied someone's life. Like this, yes.
And that's the problem with doing any means-tested thing. But the other thing is, you hear all these stories from the disabled where people have run out of food and they can't deal with this. Martin Lewis was on this week talking about it as well with councils, how councils are allowed to turn around and say, if you don't pay this money in this amount of time, we're going to demand the entire fee of a year off you. And there's lots of statistical data showing the damage it does to people with mental health issues on the mental health scale. I think with the means test and the stress that this has already caused, you're going to have a lot of old people that are going to be stressed out. You're going to have people with mental health problems who are elderly, who are going to be even more stressed out because there's this added pressure. And it's one of these things with the mean tested thing. And it's also, you see it all over the place. It's this general seeping attitude that you saw from the Conservatives and from the ideology of means testing, where you go, I don't trust everyone, so you've all got to be checked. And it's almost there's an element of, there's probably guilty people out there, so we've got to make sure we find as many of them as possible and make sure that they're dealt with. But there's also the fact that it just seems really spiteful. And it's interesting you just brought up the weather. We've just had a massive cold snap. I think part of that is actually part of the reason we get a warm spell, part, is because the hurricanes that come in. And interestingly, the hurricanes are going south through Mexico and into the United States and not looping back round into us, which is where we get these cold spurts from, plus the Sahara and, you know, other elements. I mean, you know, there's thousands. But interesting, we've just had a cold snap and I'm going, oh my God, they cut the winter fuel allowance. They are probably going to kill someone because it's being means tested. And as a result of it being means tested and the cold winter, it's going to look even worse for them. The flip side is the system itself means doesn't matter, because as long as he continues to keep his majority and no one's threatening to kick him out from within the party, his position's secure.
It could be a case of
the thing that really concerns me about all this. I get there's a logic. If it'd been me in charge, I wouldn't have done that. I would have come up with something else.
Well, I think anyone else would be. I think politically it is a nightmare. The policy you can, you know, there are, I mean, like you say, with means testing, you have to sort of fine tune it down, really. You have to set the bar high and fine tune it down. So if you're at the moment, if the whole purpose of this is just to save that money, because like David Cameron said, oh, I had a much better suggestion. So I looked it up on Hansard. I didn't listen to him, but I looked it up on Hansard. And his suggestion, by his own admission, would only save 10% of the amount of money that Rachel was after. I thought, well, it's not an alternative then, is it? Because she's not doing it because she doesn't want certain pensioners to have it, or she's ideologically opposed to means to the winter fuel payment for richer pensioners. Her stated aim is doing it to save money. So any alternative has to say how, you know, what you cut instead, or how you raise instead. I mean, like, there's a lot of people say, oh, just tax the rich, without really saying what that is. That doesn't break the manifesto promise. My preference is for you know, having a look at land tax. But, you know, you can take that argument as well. Regardless of the policy or regardless of anything like that or what it does, politically, it's a complete pig. Because if anyone even blames Labour for any deaths caused this winter, whether it's valid or not, then it's a bit like Partygate in that I don't think it will be as big a thing as Partygate, but it's a similar thing in that, you know, they're still dead in a few years' time, and if the loved ones still blame you for it, you ain't getting their vote.
But isn't there a sort of irony here as well? Because and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but pensioners are actually better off this year economically than last year,
Oh,
and
yes.
the energy that they're paying is actually lower than last year. So in a
Yes.
sense, they are better off. But there is a fear that many of them will be may not access the benefits that they're supposed to be able to access because it's like really complicated. But also, isn't there a risk that many people will decide, look, I've been told, in the media that, energy bills are really high. I'm not going to get this benefit. I'm going to not switch on the heating. And there's a risk that they end up in A&E because they have hypothermia or
If
something.
we're
I mean,
lucky,
we had that over COVID, didn't we? We had warm rooms. I mean, I've just got a notification from one provider saying we're jacking up the bills in October. We've already said that.
that was
We
already
haven't.
baked in. We knew that was we knew that was only months ago, before the
But I
election.
mean, if you're not aware, and I guess the other thing that concerns me is with all the means testing and the automation, if you're elderly and you're not very computer savvy, which is probably more likely in the older generation, that's not a good sign either because people could be missing out on stuff.
The fear of what it might do can influence you as well, because you might have some people not put the heating on for fear that they can't afford it. I mean, I remember one of my grandmothers sort of this ironically sort of killed her in a way, because she my granddad was a miner, and when he died, just in his 60s, because he was a miner, she got like as part of like the miner's pension, she got like a sack of coal every week. She looked, and that was fine, and she knew. You can budget for that. She knew how much coal she had through the week and stuff like that. And then they took the because it wasn't her house, they took away the coal fire, and she had a gas heater. And they gave her some money towards it. The problem was she didn't know how much she was spending when it was on, and it really stressed her out. She didn't. She died very soon after. And it was the stress of not knowing how much she was spending, even though she wouldn't have. My dad, her son, my dad, for example, would have made sure she was all right. There was no need to, but she was, she's a very independent lady. And it did, it really
But at least,
stressed her
yeah,
out.
you look at the bag of coal and okay, that's going to last me a
Yeah,
week or it's
exactly.
going to last me a
She
month or
could see
whatever.
where how far she was getting through it as the week went on, so she could portion it out. She couldn't do that with the gas. She couldn't, or the electricity rather, it was an electric fire, sorry. And she couldn't work out how much she was. It's a complicated enough thing for anyone. But
Had the
she had
same with
no
credit cards
idea
and debit
what sort of bill she was racking up. That was the problem with it.
I had the same with credit cards and debit cards. It's always better to have a lump sum of cash because, again, it's a thing if you've got it in your hand, you can actually keep an eye on what you're spending. But as soon as it's on a debit and credit card, unless you're savvy enough to check regularly, you don't know what you're spending. It's one of the critiques, the genuine critique against credit card and debit card system, no matter the fact that, it's actually really
Well,
easy.
because that's the thing, isn't it? Like when you, I mean, particularly our sort of generation will remember this. It's just as easy to pay £100 for something as it is £10 for something, because you're still just presenting your card. Whereas with money, there's like you're handing over bigger notes for bigger purchases, and different coloured notes. So there's more sort of there's the part of your brain going, oh, this is a lot. Whereas that
Maybe I
doesn't happen
should.
with a card, because it's the same action. It's exactly the same action, the same four buttons pressed.
How do you think this is affecting Labour in the polls? Because the thing
Well,
is,
at the
these
moment,
government changes
they're
look
comfortable. I mean,
horrific.
Starmer's absolutely going, oh, yeah, we need to be unpopular. It's like, well, no, you still want to put a positive spin on it, don't you? I don't know why they're not. Well, I do know why they're not doing it, because they want to make out this is all terrible. It's all disgraceful. We're having to do this. They want to do the same thing the Tories did, only they're not going to do it for 14 years. The Tories, like, they came in 2010. Or we're doing this to you because of Labour. It's all Labour's fault that we have to do this. It's the grown-up thing to do. We none of us like it, even though I don't happen to be suffering personally. But we're all in it together, apart from me. And but then they would talk about the green shoots of recovery. Well, George Osborne did. Then they used other terminology with later chancellors, but they never came. Now with Labour, they sort of will. So they're going to do this now. What they want to do in a future budget, hopefully not too future, is say, well, we did it. We fixed the foundations. We did the short, sharp, rip the plaster off quickly. And now we can do this, 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 and this. That is the plan. That is what they're doing it for. But I still would say you could be a bit more positive about it.
Go on, Max.
Or get rid of, like, get all the bad stuff out of the way at the very beginning. I think, like, this is one of the criticisms I had of Barack Obama when it came to healthcare. When he became president, he had a massive, not sure a massive majority, but he had a majority, I think, in Congress, and there was an opportunity there to get healthcare through. But he dragged his feet, and then he lost his majority, and then he had to compromise and settle for something much weaker. So I think it could be a case politically. That Labour try and get all of this out of the way before, before the, I don't know, before the local elections, but at least before the next general election.
It's certainly before the next general election. I was going to say another problem that Labour, maybe didn't take account of, and I actually said this before the election, because it caused a bit of a backlash. The only reason we had this vote at all, it's not normal to vote on something like this. The only reason we had this vote at all is because a lot of Labour MPs were very unhappy. Understandably, because, and I said this would be a problem, when people were saying, oh, about the supermajority, we don't want to give Labour a supermajority and there's no such thing. But what they were implying was the bigger the majority, give the more power you give. It's like, no, you've the above a certain number, the more MPs you have, the more of a hassle it is. And that's what we're seeing now. And it's a bigger problem for because you need you ha because backbenchers can be a hassle. Like your ministers, you can
The
keep them out.
ERG,
If they
the
want to
Northern
keep their
Group of.
jobs, yeah, if they want to keep their jobs, the ministers you keep in line, that's fine. But the rest of them, you need about twice as many more to make sure you can get your votes through Parliament. You're always going to have some rebels, right? So you need a certain amount to get your votes through Parliament. Beyond that, it's just extra troublemakers, and that's not like using it as a derogatory term. I would cause trouble if I was a backbencher in some ways. But
Well, you
the
would.
but that's what they've got now. But they've got an extra problem because they did so badly in 2019 and so well this year. More than half their MPs are new. They don't know how to be MPs,
Yeah.
and so they're panicking. They don't because one of the things is like one of the things I always say I learned when I was a kid. I assumed that MPs were like the creme de la creme of politicians. They all knew their stuff because I reasoned you've got to persuade your everyone in your local party that you are the champion that you should put before the electorate, and then you must be good at campaigning to win the election. But as I grew up and I kept thinking, how is it possible to have so many thick MPs? And I came to realize, particularly when I got involved in local party politics, that no, all you do is you persuade them that you should be their candidate by being more on their wavelength, that's it, on policy. And in most cases, you persuade the electorate that they should vote for you because in most seats, they will always vote for the person with that colour rosette on their chest.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so a lot of MPs are not, it's not that necessarily that they're not very bright, some are not very bright, but they don't understand politics. Like in 2019, there was this thing being said about, and there weren't anywhere near as many new Conservative MPs, but there was a significant injection of new Conservative MPs. And there were stories that they were there in the debating chamber, not knowing why people were like waving their order papers. And I'm thinking, have you never watched a debate? How can you go to Parliament without actually understanding what it does and how it works? It baffles me. But that is the reality of it. And that will now be the case for Labour MPs, only they've got loads of them. Some of them will know their stuff on politics. A lot of them won't. So they're getting these emails from people. And they don't know whether they're the people that voted. They'll all say they voted for them, but they don't know. And they're just panicking, thinking, oh, I've only got a majority of a few thousand. This is looking a bit ropey. And so they're panicking.
It was interesting because Farage actually did that little clip saying if Lee Anderson wasn't here, we wouldn't know what to do. It seems like
You
there
don't
is
know
some
what to
sort of
do.
system in place
He
to
made
like
me look
show
like.
people around and actually just give them a quick education to go, this is how the system works. And it is exactly as you said. Like I found out one thing where you're not meant to shake hands. There's like a tradition within Parliament where shaking hands, Nick Clegg's book. That's where I read it. Sorry, I've admitted to doing something pretty bad by reading that. But basically, Nick Clegg said that he couldn't believe some of the like traditions. So you don't shake hands with people in Parliament. That's like considered
But
a
in what
respect in
situation
Parliament.
do you like in general or
In
there?
general, when walking around, no one shakes hands. I've no idea as to why that exists. But there are loads of these little traditions
I'm
about it.
sure I've
Because
seen somebody do that, but okay.
I'm just saying inside Parliament, I'm not
Yeah,
saying
they probably got a
MPs
terrible telling
outside
off from the
everybody
whips
else.
later on.
But some, I mean, and again, that could have changed. I could have changed that
Well,
number.
I bet it hasn't. I bet it's in the centuries. Almost all of the ridiculous aspects of parliamentary life are caused by the fact that so many of them are privately educated and they've learnt their own weird customs and then they introduce them to Parliament. And
Am I
then
part of this? I keep getting people saying about like private school kids. I went to private school. Am I meant to
well,
know
boarding
about?
school
Is
though,
that why I know about the secret
specifically
handshake?
boarding
We're
school.
limited to, Eton. Okay, you didn't go to Eton.
Well, no, there's other weird ones as well. It's like the boarding schools generally, there's like, they're like, they're child abuse farms, really.
Yeah.
I could tell you stories. I went to several private schools, and pretty much all of them had child abusers in there. All of them. And it's just brushed under the carpet. I can't tell the tales on here, but I can say that all of them had those
This
issues.
is why it's absolute madness that you don't have that they don't have Ofsted inspections, because like one of the most like I have a lot of problems with the way governments approach what they think Ofsted is for, which is completely wrong. But one of the most useful things they actually do is like safeguarding checking.
I didn't
So
know
they
that they
should,
were exempt.
yeah, they
Lost
don't.
it, yeah. And you don't have
Like,
to hire a teacher with a teaching qualification. You can hire anyone you
no,
want.
you do what you want.
Do what you want.
And your own
The
curriculum,
same.
teach what
But
exactly what you want.
it's that free market regulation stuff again, isn't it? That
Yeah.
we were talking about off air, which I'm sure we're going to bring. This lead segues in very nicely. Segue, which is, yeah, just leave them to it. It's trusted. And worst comes to worst, they can just leave the school. Free market.
Yeah.
I mean, the other worst thing is the fact that, a lot of them, I mean, this has changed under Labour, say that they're charities. But I've looked at judgments where to be a charity, there is no bar. So you could have one ch child and give
Yeah.
them 10% off to come to the school,
Yeah.
and that's your charity status secured. So I mean, and again, this is something else we were talking about, Grenfell and the bigger issue within the UK, this obsession with the free market and deregulation. Which just allows a lot of corruption and hiding, and it's in it's all it's systematic,
Systemic,
systemic.
yeah.
Thank you, teacher.
Labour MP Zara Sultana raised it in Parliament this week, where she said, "Look, there were 72 victims in Grenfell, and the media covered it very little in comparison to two billionaires who went on an adventure
Oh
to see
yeah.
the Titanic." And
Yeah.
there's a this is where the class comes in. This is where class divide comes in.
I also think, interestingly, we talk about the media, because at the moment there's a bit of a furore, it's too boring for me to read about the chancellorship of Oxford University. And I'm thinking, you wouldn't be making anything of this if it weren't for the fact so many people working in the media went to Oxford. And politicians would have nothing to say about it if it weren't for the fact so many of them went to Oxford.
No one cares. Who's talking about the Brooks
It's
Chancellor,
like,
which is right next door in the same city,
But it's
highly
so
prestigious?
self-indulgent. They're writing about it because it's their university, or for a lot of them, it's their university. And they, so like, but most of your readers didn't go to Oxford. It's so self-indulgent. There's like no attempt to like use the platform to inform in the way that people want to be informed.
And then it comes back to what you were saying in Grenfell, like. My video tanked on that. Did you guys do videos on it?
Yeah. Mine had the lowest number of views I've had for quite a long time.
Simon goes, is that YouTube or is that, as you said, is it a class
No,
issue in
that's
the
people
UK?
looking. Like, YouTube wants people to find the content they want to watch. At the moment, the stuff that will still right now guarantee a lot of views is anything at all to do with the riots. The most recent video, for example, I did, actually Donald Trump's good for a few views now and then. But I don't really cover American stuff very often, so I limit that. But it was Tommy Robinson who's seems to be trying to organize another riot just 2 days before his court date, because he doesn't really want to go to prison.
I'm going to say allegedly, put that caveat in there so we don't get sued. But
I'm
yeah,
not suggesting he's
allegedly.
trying to. I said seems to be, because he's calling for a large number of people to congregate specifically at 10 Downing Street,
Yeah.
which on that day Keir Starmer won't even be there because it's the weekend. Larry the Cat will be there, so he can terrorize Larry the Cat, but he also can't get there because there's big iron gates in the way.
But also he
So I
can't get
said,
there because he can't fly to Britain because he'd be arrested as
oh, he
soon as
says
he.
he's coming back. No, he won't be
Yeah.
arrested straight away, but there is a warrant that becomes active in early October with the intention of making sure he definitely attends court on October the 28th, I think it is, which is a Monday, and he wants this crowd to congregate on the Saturday just before it, 2 days before. And he says it's the most important thing to happen in Britain for ages. Like,
And he's got a
it's
video as
like,
well.
yeah, sure.
But yeah. to come
And
on.
like, is he having a pop at, is oh, he obviously can't say he's against the courts or anything, so he's saying he's having a pop at Starmer, even though this has got nothing to do with his potential involvement in the riots. They potentially advertised the bloody times and dates. But it's entirely down to a case that predates the Labour government. So
yeah.
I can't understand as well how he, I'd be quite curious to see if he gets a load of people to turn up, because I would struggle to understand just how, what combination of thick you need to be to do it. Because let's say you believe him, you believe that Keir Starmer is, he's used the word tyrannical about Starmer, and he's, you know, so he's this tyrannical monster, right? Keir Starmer, okay. So you also therefore believe that all these people have been slung in prison as a result of the riots. It's a result of this tyrannical monster Starmer. So why would you then give, you know, this tyrannical monster Keir Starmer has been given now a month and a half notice that there's going to be a load of these people who don't like him, and exactly when and where they're going to be, he's going to have an army of plods waiting for them, surely, to throw you in Wormwood Scrubs. So why on earth, if you believed all that, would you turn up? And yet load will.
I think the thickness is on a spectrum. So there's the really thick who will turn up anyway, but then there's the little bit less thick who will be like, maybe it's actually, yeah, no, maybe it's a better idea to stay at home.
But isn't this like the January 6th thing as well? It's all planned, coordinated to have all these people. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was, you were like,
but the January 6th people didn't think they would actually get arrested. They thought that they were going to have a rebellion.
They thought they were national heroes. And that's what Tommy Robinson is trying to suggest. This is like for the nation. Exactly. It's not because I'm worried about what the judges will do, because obviously he's been to prison before and he cried. He doesn't like it. So he doesn't really want to go again. He obviously doesn't care enough to actually just obey the law. But, you know, he doesn't make money by being...
You think it's a bit of a ruse? He's just saying it and he's not actually going to turn up and he's just going to get the crowd to...
I don't know what will happen. All I do know is if he doesn't turn up to court again, then what should absolutely happen? I don't understand why he's been treated so leniently so far. The next time he sets foot in this country, he should be arrested and remanded into custody for as long as it takes for another court date to emerge.
Is he in Crete or in Spain? I don't
know. He's been moving about. He went to Cyprus, first of all. Then he went to Greece. Then he went to Spain. He goes all over the place. But he does spend a lot of time in Spain, because one of the most hilarious things, I got quite a few views for this one as well, was a suggestion that in order to, because at the moment HMRC are also after him for dodgy tax dealings, right? Even though he's not allowed to be a director for anything, but other people do stuff for him. And there's, I'm not going through the details, but lots of dodginess. So HMRC are after him as well. And there's a suggestion that what he might try and do to get out of this is claim that really he's a resident of Spain. So basically his plan will be to claim to be an immigrant, right? Without specifically the Spanish authorities understanding, although he can stay there as long as he likes because he's got an Irish passport.
But other
people have pointed out Spain's not shy when it comes to taxing you either. So if you tell Spain, oh, no, I'm actually a resident of Spain, they'll say, well, we'll charge you way more tax than the UK wants to.
I really wish the Irish government would take back his passport. But
I don't think they can. I did hear some Irish politicians suggesting, oh, because he seems to have falsified this thing in Canada. But he does have a right to, because he has an Irish mother. And presumably that would have been on the whatever he put on this form in Canada, presumably. Yeah. Because he doesn't have to be dodgy to get an Irish passport, I'm going to guess that was probably fine. But you can see that Ireland doesn't want any association with it. Maybe for fear that when he's out of the country, Yvette Cooper could actually revoke his citizenship and dump him on Ireland.
It's been done before, hasn't it? I it was interesting. I want to go back a little bit, because it was interesting you talking about millionaires, because I remember there was probably more chat about the millionaire yacht capsizing.
Yeah.
Then there was a Grenfell. That felt, again, like one of those.
Or any number of other things. And it's like, report it once. It's sad. You feel sorry. I don't know who they are. Bit sad. No, you know, it's not a nice way to die. But at the end of the day, it shouldn't have been wall-to-wall news for like a week.
And yet Grenfell was what, 2 days? Yeah, the day.
What did the public even learn
from
it?
The analysis.
Yeah, what did, in terms of public interest, what was the public interest in these guys dying in a yacht? It was like, it's sad. You know, every now and then you post a tragic death, sure. And it's multiple tragic deaths. Not all of them are millionaires. But what was the public interest in keeping on with it, really?
But also the fact that we've still got people with cladding and they can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then you've got, I mean, If you want to dig deeper into this systemic issue, we were again talking off air about bigger issues. It's just continual. You've got the freeholders who won't be held account. You've got the construction companies that are trying to avoid being held accountable, even though they've clearly rigged it,
Yes, yeah.
and it's totally corrupt. And then you've also got the government who encouraged these companies by deregulating. And the way I'm looking at it is deregulation just always seems to be dangerous, especially when it comes to stuff like housing. But
Yeah.
you look at the system as a whole and you're going, Jesus, the things that have been put in the past. Like I was again saying off air, I found out that if you've got sound issues, if it's in a property that was built before 1991, there's nothing you can do about it. And you're like, well, who's come up with that rule? Surely you'd think stuff like that, soundproofing or insulation or other issues related to like mold, like as a major issue within the UK would be like top priority. But it seems that no one wants to actually do anything about it. And the regulations have been set in such a way, it's nigh near impossible to get anyone to come out and actually fix these problems. Like, how have you got it set up? Like, why would it be 1991? Why not 1980,
Well, I was
1960,
saying to you
1900?
while we were talking about it, I don't know whether, like you say, it could just be that at the time there were quite a few Tories who were landlords of properties at the time. But then I'd also think, if I'm going to be charitable and think, well, maybe there was a reason, was there something about building regulations before that point that would make it, in some properties, physically impossible to deal with the issue? I don't know. I don't know how, like, when anyone comes into a house and retrofits anything, it's like magic to me anyway. So I don't know. That's all I could think of. If I was going to be charitable, I would think, is there something about building regulations from 1991 onwards that every new build from that point, it would be the sort of thing where you could do something about it, and once before, maybe not all before, but some before you could, I don't know.
I guess it's one of those things that, I mean, let's talk about a positive. The Renters Reform Bill looks like a nice step, doesn't it?
Yeah,
So
lots of
yes,
it, yeah.
getting rid of Section 21,
Max.
which is so they're talking about getting rid of finally getting rid of Section 21, which is no fault evictions where landlords can kick people out without a reasonable justification. But I believe Section 8 still remains. So Section 8 is where I think it's Section 6 or Section 8 where landlords can still kick people out, but they need a reasonable justification, which could be something like antisocial behavior or
Rent.
rent or something
Yeah,
like
you've
that.
got to pay your rent.
But there is a fear that antisocial behavior is pretty vague, and it could be used as an excuse where Section 21 is gone now, that some landlords will abuse Section 8 instead.
Even then, though, throughout an eviction, they still have to persuade a court. But, I mean, there's pros. I mean, I have heard one criticism from the landlord's point of view, which may be reasonable, in that allows tenants to end the tenancy after like 2 months. And you think to yourself, well, normally like a tenancy starts off as 6 months. And there's been an accusation where people could just say, well, I need somewhere to live here for like a couple of months. I'll get a tenancy. And then, an act of bad faith, cancel it after 2 months, having already originally done. So I would say on that one, maybe there's an argument.
But then you go, moving's considered like top five most stressful things you can do. It'll cost you probably by the end of the move, packing it up, getting the boxes, getting in a van,
You don't
driving
always have to move
over,
anything in.
maybe losing a day's work, probably
You don't have to
500
do
to a
any of that.
grand.
You don't have to do any of that to move. When the last time
Wouldn't
I moved into a rented property,
you?
I picked up the keys after work. I didn't move anything because I didn't have anything. So you don't have to move in. You don't have to move anything in.
I don't think that's the average case, though. I
It
think
doesn't
most
matter. Well, it
people
doesn't
aren't
matter.
quite.
The average case is that landlords are probably really good. My 100%. I've had three landlords in my time, and all of them were very good. In fact, I was saying recently in another stream, my last landlord, before I moved in with my now wife, my last landlord, in like the how long did I live there? I lived there for 5 years, but then I still rented for another couple because I moved in here during the pandemic, and so I was still renting there until we'd sorted out. So it was probably another year, so probably about 6 years. And he put the rent up once by about 50 quid, and he sort of apologized for the need to do that. And he was very good. He's very on top of it. If anything was wrong at all, he was straight on top of it. And there was no funny business when I moved out either. I mean, I'd got the place really clean. on what was wear and tear. He said, yeah, that's wear and tear. That's fine.
But I guess the law exists not for good landlords, but
exactly. That is exactly it. So, you know, what I'm saying is I'm quite happy to believe that the majority of landlords are good. I can't know that, but my experience of three different landlords over a period of about 20 years is all very positive. And, you know, the majority of tenants will be really good as well. So it is, laws like this are always designed for the arseholes who are not. And that can include tenants as well. Some tenants can be arseholes.
Max, have you had that experience? What's your experience being with landlords?
I was lucky that I never had to rent. So I shared with others, but it wasn't necessary to rent, so I was okay. But I have had friends who've had good experiences and bad experiences. In Ireland, it's always been a bit of a wild west, so there aren't really strict regulations, and it's getting worse all the time. While here in Italy, their tenants have very strong protections, and there's a type of 4-year tenancy, so you can rent for 4 years, and then at the end of that, you negotiate with the landlord for another 4 years, and they're not allowed to increase it beyond a certain limit. So it's not seen as the type of business that we see it maybe in Britain or in Ireland, where it's seen really as a business or a way of life. While I think in other parts of Europe, it's seen more as a necessary evil in contrast to a business.
Yeah.
Can we move on to the next topic, which is the NHS, because there was a report about the NHS published this week, which was pretty damning.
It came out today, so I've read quite a bit, but it is quite long. It's 160 odd pages. Not as long as the Grenfell report. That's a beast. That is a beast.
You want to
the executive 16, summary is quite long.
It's like 16 kilos or something.
It's about 1,700 words. It's pages, sorry, or something like that. The executive summary is fairly beefy. That's about, when you strip away the blank pages, there's always blank pages, that's about 40-ish.
What for?
Just the executive summary for Grenfell. Yeah. So then, yeah, the whole Aradazi report on the NHS for Labour is like 163 pages, with some, of course, like titles and blanks in there.
How do you find it, Max? If you lead it.
I haven't read it, or I haven't been able to skim through it. But from what I've heard, it's pretty bad. That infants waiting up to 10 hours, I think it is, in A&E was one. Doctors and nurses completely burnt out and feeling completely demoralized. Number of hospitals crumbling, literally crumbling down. There's nothing really new, it seems, in it, or not that I've heard. Just a lot of shocking, like, stuff is, there's bad news in it, but just the data connected to the bad news is pretty bad.
You could turn around and, how many of the 40 hospitals did the Tories build? One.
None.
No, was it not four?
No, not a sausage. And in fact, when an official was asked earlier this year ahead of the election, what's the chances of any being built even by 2030? They said probably none.
I was under the impression that there were four hospitals.
I don't know where they are, because
Some of them were on paper, but some of them were in the design phase, and then some of them had the planning was already in.
There's some like that, but there's none built.
Because I remember you saying it some years ago about, you know,
it was a lick of paint on the door.
Realistically,
what they were talking about at the very best was knocking down one building and replacing another, which is not new hospital. It needs to happen because buildings have, a lifespan.
Yeah, but Boris said that's maintenance. New hospital.
Yeah. He says lots of things, you know. He spends a lot of time drunk sleeping in a hedge.
An Italian hedge from time to time.
Yeah, yes. bunga parties. The things that I did skim off it was some of the recommendations, but also I think there were some things that it didn't recommend that could have been put in. Again, I've only skimmed through it because it came out today, but it seems like social care is still being ignored. Mental health is definitely being ignored. I can definitely relate to my own experiences in London.
Yeah,
I mean, it's shocking. Like, the A&Es need, pretty much every hospital I've been to, and unfortunately I've had to go to a few in London, majority of them need a overhaul. I've been to. I think Whitechapel was all right, but it's been refurbed relatively recently. St. Thomas, the A&E in St. Thomas, if someone's in a chair in the corridor, like a wheelchair, you can't actually get the bed round without moving the person in the wheelchair.
Right.
Who the hell's designed that?
Yeah.
And it looks relatively modern. The A&E at King's needs fixing as well, completely. Needs a complete overhaul. It all needs investment. I've got a couple of friends of mine that are directors in some of the hospitals. And I said to them, what's the one thing that you would like the most help with to fixing or starting to fix the issues with the hospitals? And they actually said it's the A&Es, it's the front. And you're going, how have these hospitals been built to such an extent that no one's thought that's the key area to make sure it's
I can probably
accessible
guess.
and easy access?
I can probably guess because this is probably the same sort of scenario that faced me whenever I've been involved in my lab being refurbished. And the last such occasion, the architect came in, they had this design, I think that's totally impractical. And I said, well, this. And they did that to be fair. But one of the things I said was, because I had blackout blinds in that area, and as a physics teacher, I need blackout blinds. And I said, I need blackout blinds. Okay, fine. And then when it was all done and I came back to look at it, I had these like translucent blinds, and they weren't, because the blackout blinds also need a thing around the side, so you can't get light coming in at the sides. So not only could you see through the blinds, there was nothing down the sides, no runners or anything. And I said to her, this, I said, oh, what do you think of it all? I expected me to be, and the rest of it was absolutely brilliant because it had changed considerably from the original plans because I made sure that I was involved in the process. And I said, these blinds need to be blackout blinds. I said, look, let me do this. I turned all the lights off. We can still see each other. And he went, oh, as if it just needed, and I'll have a little look at, as if it just needed adjusting. It's like, mate, the light's coming through the blinds. Adjusting it isn't going to, as if I'm talking about a little chink of light at the top. But that'll be what's happened with the hospital as well. The people, the end users will not have been consulted on the plans. That'll be what's happened. It'll be someone dealt with it who doesn't know how it works in. They won't have actually asked the people who use the hospitals. They won't have asked the medical staff or the clerical staff or anyone like that. That is how you make a cock up like that.
Seems like it. It seems like you've got to squeeze your way through the point which needs to be. It's like the reverse of a funnel.
It reminds me, that story reminds me exactly of a situation that happened in Venice many years ago. It was about 10, 15 years ago. They decided to build a new bridge which connected the bus station to the train station. And the architect did it free of charge. He did it pro bono, and he said, look, I'll do it. But the architect lives in Seville in Spain, and he had never been to Venice, or he had never been into that part of Venice. So he designed the bridge. And then it was an absolute disaster. So it certainly makes sense that you'd have people who the architects who'd never actually consult with the people who would actually need to use the A&E. But I think there's also another problem that maybe was in the report as well about how, or maybe wasn't in the report, but it's been mentioned before, how the NHS has had to take money from the capital budget just to fund day-to-day expenses. So when they say, okay, we need to do massive maintenance or we need to rebuild part of the hospital, they can't because they've spent all the money. Not that they have decided, but they've been forced to spend the money on new equipment or things that is not really capital expenditure.
Well, there's all sorts of things as well. A few years ago, Theresa May slashed social care funding. And then what she did is she said, okay, the stuff that now we're not funding, we'll get the NHS to do. But instead of just transferring the money to them, which still wouldn't have been very good because you're stopping some people who know how to deliver that thing and giving it to some people who are geared up for something else entirely, she gave them a much smaller amount of money to deliver it, and then had the nerve to say she was boosting NHS funding as well. So there's all sorts of things like that, and a lot of that is what's happened with A&E in particular, because they are the last safety net. When the places you should really go are overloaded and they can't, ultimately you end up being sent to A&E for all sorts of things, because they're the one thing that they're the one place that can't tell you to go away or that they're full.
But
You'll just
this
have a
is what
long
the
wait.
GP services have been saying, isn't it?
Yes.
GP services are basically saying we're not operating the way we should and
Yeah.
efficiently. And then that's pushing it
And that
onto
is one of the
that.
things that's going to change, because what was interesting about this report was it wasn't and why you can probably guess that a lot of the recommendations will actually be taken forward, because it was done in conjunction with Labour. Labour commissioned it. And it's not like you can easily, and this often happens, you appoint a suitably qualified independent purpose to go tell me all the problems and come up with recommendations, and then they do that, and then they come, and then their recommendations are either something that's politically not feasible or comes with a massive bill, which at the moment is also going to get a big no from the Treasury. Mm-hmm. Whereas this report was conducted by someone who is medically is been a doctor, has been a surgeon, but also he's a Labour politician. He sits in the House of Lords now, but he's been a Labour minister. So he has clearly, if you look at the way this report is structured and look at the way the guidelines were set, he's clearly already been told the sort of the tracks that Labour were laying down anyway, and said, come up with something feasible within the sort of things we can do, which probably makes it more useful, because then, you know, so one thing it does, one of its biggest points is there's been over time an increase in the proportion of the funding spent on secondary care hospitals, but no equivalent increase in productivity. And he said what should happen, there should be more money spent on primary and community care, which is what they want to do anyway if they want to focus more on prevention. So that is something that I think we can probably safely assume is going to occur. There's going to be more money diverted back to GP surgeries and community care and away from hospitals.
Well, I thought Brexit was meant to fix all of this.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't you see the video?
I don't think, to be fair, Keir Starmer made any such claim.
He wants to continue it, though.
No, like, God, does he want it? No, he doesn't. He just can't do anything about it at the moment.
If I'd been him, I'd have done the impact report. I would have done a Brexit impact.
Oh, well, that's...
Maybe so and announced
I it. Can understand why they don't want to do it, but that is, from my point of view, what rejoiners should focus on. Instead of coming up with lies, just actually we should be pressuring the government. Oh, you want to be a serious government where the public can have confidence that you're making all the right decisions with our tax money, and you want to be... All governments say they want to be transparent, right? Okay, so when are we going to get the economic impact report on being outside the customs union, being outside the single market, and then an overall one for Brexit? How about that? And that's where I think the pressure should be, because I don't think, if you ask enough times, Steve Bray tried asking it once, but it's on the street, to be fair, it can be ignored. But in a studio or something like that, or a face or a direct question, I would say if there's enough pressure to ask that question, it's a very difficult one for Rachel Reeves to argue that we shouldn't have an economic impact. Because why? If you're going to have an economic impact assessment of anything, why not something that is so impactful on everything, on every aspect of life? It impacts the NHS because we now struggle to get a lot of drugs. Like, there's always shortages of some drugs in any country. It's usually about 20. In France, it's about 20. It used to be that in the UK. Now it's about 160 at any one time. It's off the chart in terms of the economy in general. Supply chains are broken down. We've got, you know, we are the customer of last resort. So as soon as there's a coal snap anywhere in Europe, we're not getting any more tomatoes. We're going to have trays of coffee coming out to sell us you turnips instead.
Turnips again.
Silly woman. I think people thought she meant Swedes as well. She didn't even get the vegetable right. But I don't care about that. I don't care. But at the same time, what I do know is whether it's a Swede or a turnip, it's not a substitute for a tomato.
No, it is not. I mean, it came off as if she was suggesting we were spoiled.
That's the thing, isn't it? What? You want tomatoes all the year round? What is wrong with you?
Spoiled child.
But also an impact assessment should be welcomed by Brexiteers, because they would be able to see all the great benefits of Brexit, no?
Yeah, they know full well it's not. Jacob Rees-Mogg, even in 2019. See, Jacob, in some ways, you have to respect him a bit, because he's such an idiot that he's honest with it. You know, in 2019, he was asked directly, you know, why aren't you supporting a second vote on the terms of exit? He says, because people would vote to stay. Just bold as
that. And also when it came to the checks at the port, he said, no, we can't impose these checks because they'd be too expensive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Labour have deferred checks on fruit and veg now, which is a lower risk product, but still, because they were supposed to come online at the end of this year. They're now going to be delayed till July, specifically because of the fears it will hit food prices. Well, if it'll hit food prices at the end of this year, it'll hit them at the middle of next year, so you'll delay them again. They're basically saying that they're going to keep doing it until the cost of living crisis has gone away. Well, that could be a few years. But either way, you're still admitting that it's inflationary. You're saying that some aspect of leaving the single market is inflationary.
I was talking to a friend of mine who runs a fruit and veg stall, and he was telling me it's a couple of weeks, it was at the beginning of July. If he'd gotten a punnet of peppers, he would be expecting to pay between, I think, 50p and a pound. This year, 8 quid was cheapest it got to. And then it was 2 or 3 weeks where it dropped to 50p again and then went straight back up. And that's it.
Because we are the
Partly
customer of
that's
last
weather.
resort.
Yeah. Mine.
They'll happily send stuff with us if it's worth the cost. But it's like, you send a consignment to Belgium or to Germany or anywhere else in the single market, never mind just the EU, and all you need is the invoice. That's it. Send it off. With us, there's a whole stack of paperwork. And like, who can be arsed with that? If you've got a choice of which order to send things in, you'll send the stuff with a load of hassle with it last. And then if you run out of it, oh, too bad, because we can't supply you. And
Or,
that's why we will get these shortages.
and you get the gamble, it's stuck in port, not being checked for 3 or 4 days. So either you're paying for the refrigeration cost, or you're putting off the lorry drivers who go, hell no, am I going back there? I got
Well,
stuck in a place for 4 days
yeah, lorry
with no
drivers don't get
toilet,
paid when
no
the wheels aren't
facilities.
turning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was also frustrating about all of this was that you'd have Jacob Rees-Mogg who would say, well, don't worry, we don't need to check because the EU does the check.
Yeah, it's
Yes,
like,
but
no,
the
they
EU does
don't.
the check when it comes into the EU or into the
Yeah,
single
well, no, it
market.
doesn't. Not for our stuff,
No,
because it's not for the
but
single market.
if it's not
Used
for the
to.
single market, it's going to be it's
It's not. And
for the British
also,
to check.
Brexiteers would be outraged at the suggestion that EU officials
Yes.
would be doing our checks for us. But they're now going to. Like, if it's bound for the UK, it's like, well, it's going to the UK. We don't care.
One of the things that caught me, and I never really heard anyone point out to him, but Max and I stumbled across quite a few stories over the last year of smuggling.
There's an open border that some people, it's an open border.
So they want a secure border and an open border at the same time.
And we know there's a massive amount of smuggling. We know for a fact for two reasons. First of all, and this is more customs union than single market issue. First of all, when they decided to do a standard check, this is single market, a couple of years ago, they checked some like two dozen lorries or something. All but one of them had dangerously unfit for human consumption food in them. All, of course, destined for, sort of back alley type thing, because people in a cost of living crisis and they can't afford to eat. Well, someone's selling them food really cheaply, they'll take it. So that's like a disgrace. But the other reason, in terms of customs union, what you would used to do if you wanted to smuggle some things through, you'd hide your like cigarettes in a box or something, but then there'd be other legitimate stuff there as well. And you just hope the customs officials did check the box with the contraband in it. Whereas now they're so confident they just fill the whole lorry full. And we know this has happened because a small number of lorries has been found. And in the news, it's always record haul, record haul. Of course, it's a record haul. And in one of these news stories, they just opened the lorry and it was all there. Of course, it was, because they know the chances of it being checked is so small. They're now sending whole lorry loads of it through. So we know that smuggling is happening on an industrial scale, which will be costing us an absolute fortune in lost import duties, enough to cover this black hole for a start.
And there's another reason for an impact assessment.
And there's also the Russia report. And
Yes.
you were talking about the Brexit impact report. He's been completely silent on the Russia report and having a part two done,
Well, no one's
or
asked, to be honest.
releasing a redacted version of the original. I assume you can't completely redact it. I get that.
Well, I
But
mean, we have
yeah.
had a Russia report released with all the information I think we really needed anyway, which is that the previous government specifically told our security services not to look for evidence of Russian interference. So what I said is what I very much hope David Lammy and Yvette Cooper did with MI6 and MI5 is in some roundabout way said to them, if there has been any ministerial, because obviously they can't ask that, but if there's been any ministerial instruction that you are not to look for evidence of this thing that is now rescinded, you should absolutely be looking for evidence. But now we have a problem that, like, it's so if they so hopefully that is now happening. It's certainly not in Labour's interest that this happens, so I see
Or
no
the actual
reason for them
report.
at all. Well,
Well, damned if they do
again,
and
to
they're damned if
release a
they
report,
don't.
what would be in it? What would, like, when people are calling for the report to be released, what would you expect to find in it that you don't already know?
Well, me
Because
personally, what would I hope? What would
Because
I
there's no
expect?
evidence, because we haven't looked for it. So it can't actually
Well,
release any
no, because if
evidence.
you go, this is the problem. There is that element, but then if you dig around elsewhere with viable sources, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday,
Yeah.
we had a massive amount of information come out. So
Probably the US,
basically,
yeah.
turned out that I think the American FBI report, which was an affidavit for a court case on Thursday, got released. And according to that, there are about 600 influencers that are being paid off by
Yeah,
Russia.
yeah.
How many over here? We
Exactly.
don't know. And this is the problem. If you're not looking, they'll just continue.
So that's what we need. We don't need anything to be released as such because we know the important information is we're not looking for evidence. So whatever is released in any report isn't going to tell us anything anyway because they
I
weren't
think
looking
it
for
would if
evidence.
we don't like so we know 2.3 million has been given over to the Conservative Party, but we don't know how deep that goes. We don't know what deals have
No,
been.
but for that you'd need an investigation.
Yeah, but that would be part of the committees.
No, I don't mean a parliamentary investigation. They're quite free to. I mean a proper investigation, a real one that
By
results in
police.
people being expelled from the country and or put in prison.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, 100%. I want the police and the MI6 and MI5 to investigate, but I think there's a reluctance there because of the links and ties it will have with Brexit. There's like a
I don't.
250k.
I'm not
There's
sure
a
there will.
250k donation that was given to the DUP, and we don't know who gave it. And that then bought front page coverage of the Metro on, I think, the week before the election.
I think Labour will be highly motivated to launch investigations for a
I wouldn't have
couple of
expected them
reasons.
to announce that on day one.
I don't expect
What
them
else
to
to do with
announce it.
announce?
I
They
don't expect
didn't.
them to announce it. I expect them to do it. First of all, like David Lammy, just earlier this year, was talking about dealing with the kleptocracy, as he called it, which ties in very much with Russian influence. Buying up properties in London and so on. But also, for example, take Reform UK. Now, although they're a much bit, and they're a bigger problem for the Tories because the Tories made them a bigger problem for them. But they're also an issue for Labour to an extent because they came second in a lot of seats that Labour currently hold. And they get an awful lot of don't, be, there's a huge weakness there in terms of foreign donations because a lot of their stuff comes in through PayPal where you don't know who it's come from. So it's massively in Labour's interests to deal with this for lots of reasons, not the least of which Labour are openly saying that Nigel Farage and Reform UK are malignant. When I had my follow-up call from the Labour Party, because I donated a fair amount to them after the election, without asking, because you can imagine if they ask you a few questions, they've got a checklist, oh, they're probably interested in this, we'll plug this. No, without asking me any questions, the main thing they wanted to get to me is how Labour want to basically deal with Nigel Farage. This is before the riots as well, by the way. So they consider that to be of sufficient import that they want to deal with pop they want to deal with Nigel Farage, they want to deal with Reform UK. One of the easiest ways is to deal with Russian interference anyway, and there's lots of other reasons to do
I'd
it.
agree that.
The only thing I could think of if I was going to imagine a future where Labour are shy about dealing with it, there's two things I can think of. One is like with anything else, they've come in, new government, they've got this massive in tray, and it's about fighting the fires. Is there a sense in which some of these, we know some things always do, is it one of these things that says, right, we'll get onto that next year when we sort this out, then other things happen, emergencies happen, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I
The
agree.
other thing is the fear of it ending up in a situation which is very reminiscent of Brexit in many ways, where they have to own up to a very serious problem that they cannot say what they can do about it quickly. So is there, but that's why, in a sense, I don't mind not knowing if I can work on the assumption that it is at least being dealt with, but I would quite like someone to directly ask David Lammy or Yvette Cooper about the previous instruction not to look for evidence. Has that, have you made it clear that we actually should be looking at for evidence of foreign interference in our politics?
I would flip that back and go, last week showed to me something that I've not seen or read about very often, where you've got the FBI doing a dump, Department of Justice doing a jump, the dump the next day. Then you had the head of MI6 who never comes out with the head of the CIA in a meeting, openly chatting about Russian interference. You don't tend to have those three things happen
Yeah.
unless they're going, you're not talking about this. Let's try and push this into the mainstream. That's why they've done it. So I go, either they haven't heard anything from Labour and Labour is just talking it internally, or, and I think more likely, Labour just want to stick their head in the sand to this because it is a huge Pandora's box to open. And therefore, that's why the head of MI6 and the head of CIA had that meeting on Saturday on Financial Times.
I'm not
That
sure
would be my
about that,
guess.
because they don't need Labour to do anything specifically. They just need Labour to not tell them not to look for things.
Talking of secrets, Max, we are at the end. You have a secret to reveal.
Yes, unfortunately, this is my last Sunday roast because I have to take a step away, but I will be back as a guest maybe from time to time. Unfortunately, the work-life balance is getting the better of me, and unfortunately, I can no longer be co-host. But I know that Alex has some wonderful co-hosts lined up. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that before we go.
Big Madge and Liz Webster have agreed, and we have two emergency co-hosts, but I'm waiting to just get clarification as to who they'll be. So we have two surprise co-hosts. So we've grown a little bit, but we've lost a lot. So yeah, big hug, man. Like, gonna miss you, but we'll definitely get you back on. And I love the
Yeah,
fact you'll be
please.
back on as a guest. Like,
I'd
we
love
get to do
that.
stuff like this, which is just awesome. To and fro, back and forth, knocking ideas, not being too much of an echo chamber, I think, this week. Phil. Fantastic.
So
Thank
much,
you
Bill.
so
No
much,
problem
Bill.
at all,
Like, yeah,
always.
you are definitely one of our ever ongoing awesome regulars as well. On that sad and maybe hopeful note,
Yes.
thank you so much to my former co-host. Thank you so much to Phil for being a guest on today's episode.
No,
Phil
just have a great rest of Sunday, I suppose, when this goes out.
and Max.
Thanks to everyone for coming on and for liking the show, for sharing it, and stick with it because I'm going to be back as a guest from time to time. But I think the co-hosts and Alex will do a wonderful job, and I'm looking forward to watching it on Sunday.
Thank you very much, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye.
Next week for another exciting story from the files of Police Squad.